Hello there, this is The View from Tab. I'm Jim Menick.
I'm John Cruz.
And I'm Mike Beats.
And we're going to try once again, this is episode 4, to talk about this and that and to try to, you know, figure out what is going on in our little world. And tonight we want to start out with the topic of the definitions of debaters at different levels. And by this I mean we have some debaters who are novices, some debaters, of course, who are varsity, and in some places we also have junior varsity. And before we started recording this, Mike was saying that where he comes from, which is California, they have less junior varsity. But anyhow, let's start defining the terms and try to work from there. We'll start out. This all comes from a tournament we had this last week that took place at the Bronx. So I'll ask John to start off the discussion.
Sure. Okay, so I guess the source of controversy, if there was controversy last weekend, is at what age is it appropriate to be in different divisions? So specifically, I think JV is where there's often a lot of controversy. What does it mean to be a JV debater? Is it appropriate to be a third-year debater in JV? I would argue probably not. I've always seen junior varsity at its best as a training exercise. It makes sense at tournaments like the Glen Brooks, where you have a JV tournament that's frankly so competitive it is probably better than most varsity tournaments, or a tournament like Yale where you have limited entries, so you want to bring a large group. So JV is a second division, so it doesn't water down or cause skewing in the varsity division.
John, if your house is on fire, you can leave. Is that you?
I apologize. I do live in Manhattan, and even with all my windows closed, the blaring sound from Washington Square Park came there. You can ignore that, but consider it ambiance for the background.
Okay, fine.
But anyway, so just to sum it up quickly, Jim and I run a league called the Metro Hudson League, the MHL, which is a training league for younger debaters in the area. So we tend to have mostly first and second year debaters. We have a novice division. We have a JV division. So I think in a setting like that, JV also makes sense, where you don't really even have varsity competition because you're focusing on training. Now, I think sending lots of more experienced debaters into JV to accumulate trophies for your team, and people know I love trophies, but I think that's a little lame, right? Sort of skewing the purpose of a junior varsity division might be a little lame. Similarly, if you've been competing in middle school debate before you entered high school, and it's middle school Lincoln Douglas debate, probably you shouldn't be a novice either.
Yeah, I think there's you bring up a lot of different things here that sort of aren't all the same.
Sure, sure.
Let's start with a basic definition that a junior varsity debater would be a second year debater. So essentially a sophomore. The norm would be a sophomore debater.
Right.
Now, for that sophomore debater, realistically, there aren't a lot of opportunities to debate and actually succeed. Now, we both agree, and we talked about this a little bit before we started recording, that we like our younger kids to get their heads handed to them because
yes,
that's how they learn. There's no question about that. But by the same token, if you're going to get your head handed to you for a year, that can be very discouraging. And so the idea of having debates where you are at your own level is a good thing. I mean, it's the same reason you would have novice debates. We have JV debates. The places that have them are few and far between. As I said, we have them in our league, which is a New York State thing, and that connects to something else. And I think one of the reasons we have this is because our state organization has a junior varsity level. So we are feeding into that state tournament at the end of the year. And so
Sure. Our
league was created, I think, in some respects just to provide those those qualifications at that level, as much as to provide opportunities for them to debate. Another thing that happens is around here we have essentially only one that I can think of offhand, one junior varsity division in a major tournament, or minor tournament for that matter, aside from the MHLs, which is at the Yale, which is the very beginning of the year. Now, very few people have novices
right
in a month of starting school. We start school this year we started something like mid-September, and this tournament's the last week of September. So we don't have novices ready that we're going to pay that much money. Whereas a lot of people will have junior varsity people, second-year people who can't get into the varsity division or can't compete at the varsity level, shouldn't compete at the varsity level.
And it should also be noted that, and I mentioned this also before, we keep referring to what we should probably tell the audience that we had an abortive effort recording this because we had a little technical breakdown. But so when we keep referring to the things we were talking about before, that's what we mean. But anyway, it should be noted, I mean, when I was competing in high school and when I started coaching, there were a lot more JV divisions in the Northeast. Ridge had a JV division, Columbia had a JV division, a number of other terms do. A number of those tournaments did and have turned them into novice divisions. I guess the other big tournament in our area that has JV is Harvard. But you're right. Most of these tournaments have a novice division, not a JV tournament.
Yeah, I mean, we've been instrumental, actually, in turning those JV divisions novice divisions for whatever
and with
reason.
With some complaints. Some people do like having the JV divisions.
But all the novice divisions have been full. And one of the things, one of the reasons that I was pushing to making these novice instead of JV was that by halfway through the year, most of those JV divisions were peopled by novices. There was a strong number of novices because they were ready to go to these kinds of tournaments. So, I mean, I'm thinking of places we went. I mean, I know plenty of my freshmen would go to Harvard, for instance. I had freshmen going to Ridge. They were going, and they were doing well at these tournaments.
Sure.
They're absolutely doing well at these tournaments.
Now,
against older kids. I mean, they were capable of doing that if they were strong debaters.
The Minnesota Debate Teachers Association has a state tournament, and they actually they have a state tournament for novice and JV specifically, and they define what a novice and JV debater are, what novice and JV debaters are. In their rules, it says a novice entry may be entered if the student is competing in their first year of debate. In a two-person event, both students must be participating in their first year of debate. A junior varsity or JV entry is defined as a student who is in their first or second year of debate. In a two-person event, one or more of the students are participating in their first or second year of debate. A year of debate is defined as more than six rounds or two high school tournaments within the same school year. For example, a student who participates in two tournaments, six total rounds in year one, and then in year two participates in debate, they may enter the tournament as a novice debater as long as Rule 3-1A is adhered to, which is the definition of a novice. B, a student may not participate more than once in any one division of the JV novice state tournament. For example, a student who participates in novice division of Lincoln Douglas in year one may not participate in novice division of policy debate in any subsequent years.
I would buy those definitions in a second.
I seem to remember at one point, Jim, you being a little uncomfortable with something like that, that if somebody debated a couple of rounds, and they came back the next year and said they were novice, weren't you?
No. Here's the thing. I mean, this takes us into Massachusetts, because I went through this last year.
Right, that was Massachusetts.
Yeah, Massachusetts, and we were at Manchester, and Jonathan Peel was running the tournament, and he was defined, and it was a novice division. And he was defining the novice division. I forget what the exact number was, but if someone could have had gone to something like six or seven tournaments and still been defined as a novice. So, yeah. See, I've had kids who, like, debate once or twice at most. Like, maybe they have, like, six flights or something in 2 days of MHLs. And then they are never heard from again until the next year. And I feel sort of bad for them having to classify them as a junior varsity because, realistically, they never even gave it the shot the first time. So I'm sympathetic with that. And so I like that little exception that's thrown in there for the – for the kid, because these are kids in the first year of high school, and there's all this other stuff bombarding them.
Right.
And so the idea that they come back and do debate next year, but you would discourage them to come back and do debate the next year and realize, well, everybody else kept moving that year, they didn't, but they're on the train anyhow.
I agree that exception is good. In fact, I think that's something that would be good if that were that kind of exception were a little more common.
But this raises another question, which is the middle school debaters.
Uh huh.
because we had at this tournament middle school people who had actually debated in seventh grade and in eighth grade, and I don't know where they're debating. But by the time they came to this tournament, they're debating now as novices, and they were debating at a much higher level than our high school kids who were just starting out for the first time. So sometimes in middle school, they do goofy kinds of things and call it debate. But these kids were debating pretty much in an orthodox fashion.
I suspect, I got the impression that one or two of them were actually debating in our own tournaments, which was, you know, we have to find a way to make sure that, and that's fine. I mean, middle schoolers can debate in high school tournaments.
Yeah, I've had middle schoolers, but I've always tried to push them up. I haven't said, okay, now you're going to be a novice for the third time.
Right, exactly. Well, that's ridiculous.
I have debaters that go to camp before their first year of debate. Mm-hmm. And, you know, typically I'll send them, well, usually our first tournament is Yale, and I'll send them in JV. But, you know, last year at Columbia, I think Columbia has a novice division, right?
Yes.
Yeah, it's novice.
And so, you know, I had kids that competed at, you know, at Yale and JV and or in at maybe one or two tournaments in varsity. But then when they got to Columbia, they went novice because it was their first year of debate. You know, they'd only been to one or two tournaments before, but they were in higher divisions.
I mean, from my perspective, that is the nature of that field. I mean, not the fact that, I mean, a lot of people won't have had that experience of having gone to Yale, but that doesn't make you a better debater. That just means went to Yale. And then, you know, we're talking the Columbia tournament takes place in January. So by the time you get to January, all the kids have roughly the same amount of experience, but they're still in their first year. And experience is meaningful. I mean, I firmly believe that the absolute perfect sophomore versus the absolute perfect senior will always lose. Yeah,
sure.
It's just one of those things. Because the experience factored in on top of it, experience is very important. And, so these people are all, I mean, that's part of it. I mean, if you debating at the same experience level. And what are you gaining as a debater when you go to a tournament if you're debating down?
There is a school of thought, and this was actually back, seemed to be more culture wars in policy debate in Minnesota about, you know, there were teams that wanted to, they wanted to go fast. They wanted to have lots of evidence. They wanted to do critiques. They wanted to do a lot of stuff. And so it was sort of thought that the JV division could be a division for kids that wanted to do debate, but they just weren't going to go to camp. It wasn't going to be their main activity, but they could go JV for one or two or even their entire high school career because they would have more fun doing that instead of going against people who make their life out of debate, which I guess I'm also sympathetic for.
I appreciate that, but I think that's hard to nurture in throughout a community.
Not only that, but calling those kids JV who wanted to, I mean, I understand that the argument is partially that they don't want to commit their life to debate, but it also sounds like they don't want to commit to a particular style of debate is problematic.
I don't know if it doesn't have anything to do with style. I mean, I can even in football, like or in sports, if you're just not very good and you're a senior, you play JV. I mean,
I guess I was just associating that with you saying like they don't want to speak fast or they don't want to do camp or whatever. I understand what you mean. I understand.
It's just a different. A different belief system about what is good for them educationally and what is good. I mean, as LD moves down the road of becoming a faster style, of becoming a more evidence heavy, of taking a lot more hours of preparation to be able to compete at the very highest levels, I could see more people saying, we need a division for kids that want to still get the benefits of Lincoln Douglas debate, but don't want to get crushed because they don't want to, you know, basically dedicate their lives to doing Lincoln Douglas debate or whatever.
Well, that's called public forum, isn't it? I mean,
public forum is already evolving. Yeah. Go look at, somehow at Big Bronx, the public forum rounds took longer to adjudicate and coach than the policy rounds. I didn't get that.
But I mean, at the point where we don't introduce professional judges into public forum, they have no choice but to, at some point, have a lighter style of debating. So,
I've heard lots of public forum debaters complain about their judges, though.
Yes, they do. More than every, so my team is more than any other event. It's to me, it's unreal to listen to.
I mean, it's going to be the nature. I mean, it was designed for those judges, and obviously it's changed a bit, but those are the judges that they're going to get for the foreseeable future. And frankly, there ought to be some public speaking activity where you're speaking publicly to somebody who isn't prepped to listen to you. I mean, you have to have an audience who just, you have to convince them, and it's your job to convince them rather than their job to be, you know, to go by your style.
Completely agree. I'm sorry, go on, Pete.
I was going to say I have two comments to make about that. One, I would say that I think the NFL would have been rightly served to try to not have the TOC have a public forum division. I think the introduction of a public forum TOC harms the goal of the public forum as an activity for the NFL. Because insofar as team, there's going to be a proliferation of coaches, bringing extra coaches to help prepare, which means the judging pool is going to become more and more specialized. I think that it's going to go down that road just because of the nature of that. You're going to have more specialized judges. You're going to have coaches that are in the judging pool and not people just off the street. Plus, in Lexington,
certainly
Kentucky,
a TOC, it'll be like
Yeah. And then I think that there's the TOC has a trickle down effect. Then kids are going to expect that when they go to invitationals then too. So that's my first point. My second point was about other events. There's an event in California called SPAR, which is Spontaneous Argumentation, which is actually done as an IE, and it is done at speech tournaments where kids do spontaneous argumentation in front of lay judges, which is by far the most popular event in California for speech events at like league tournaments and stuff like that. Certainly not like for like national qualifiers or anything like that. But
we should include a link to the SPAR rules on the View from Tab blog, I think. Beats has shown them to me before. It's really interesting because it's similar to something I think that actually we might have also called SPAR that I did as a sort of a public speaking exercise when I was younger. And I think it's pretty cool, actually.
Yeah. But anyway, in terms of people staying in JV for too long, or I guess I don't really care. Coaches should be able to decide how to run the teams how they want to. And if a kid needs a good pick me up and they need to go in the JV division, and that's fine. And for example, I have a debater who started debating he went to a couple tournaments in eighth grade. In ninth grade, he obviously couldn't go to novice tournaments, but I kept him in JV because I just wanted him to learn how to debate without getting crushed.
Sure.
Because I think that there's definitely a skill to learn of debating from what I call debating from ahead, as opposed to always debating from behind. And when you learn and you're very I think that debaters who are thrown into the varsity division very quickly always have this mentality of one, always debating from behind, and two, taking shortcuts because they have to in order to compete at the higher level. So they'll take the cheap shot win over a more, more strategic or well-thought-out style because that was how they got by when they were a freshman or a sophomore versus a senior in their fourth year of debate. They had to go for the easier wins.
I'm sorry, go on.
No, that's all I was going to say, is that I think that there is something to be said about keeping a kid in a division a little bit beyond their ability to compete in the JV division, just because I think it teaches them a skill to debate from ahead and controlling a debate round, as opposed to always feeling like they're behind in a debate round.
Well, I just want to clarify that. I mean, I think that's a very good point, and I do think – I don't agree with the approach that some coaches take. And, of course, they're free to do what they want with their teams, but I don't agree with the approach that you just throw novices into varsity from the beginning. I know some people who don't even believe you should have novices go to novice tournaments. I don't agree with that. I also don't agree with the idea that you go to, get eight novice rounds and then suddenly you're a varsity debater.
Yeah, there are certainly people who forego the JV thing. We have people out here. They're novice or they're varsity.
Right. I mean, my approach has been at Bronx Science has been pretty straightforward. You're a novice. You're novice year. I do encourage my novices to try to go to, you know, they can go to some JV tournaments, and we have often sent some novices to a tournament like Newark and Varsity just because there are no entry limits. So, you know, what the hell? And then a lot of times it's a really good learning experience. We've had kids who've been on the cusp of breaking, and I think that's really exciting for them. I do think that, I mean, I do personally believe that in your second year it's a good idea to go varsity as early as possible. I guess maybe differ slightly with Beats on that. But I would point out that, well, I think Beats' example is very important, and I think the point about debating from ahead and not from behind is important. The example I think that you gave Beats is still about a debater who's in a second year. I mean, my real objection is debaters who are into their third year of debate, having debated many, many rounds in the first 2 years. At that point, I think that they're while I respect that each coach needs to do what's wrong, right for his or her program, at the same time, I think it starts to get unfair to the other kids who are competing in the division. Like, if you're in your third year and you've had many, 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 many tournaments under your belt, at that point, and I personally think it gets ridiculous. But maybe that's just me.
Well, that applies to the middle school students, too.
Sure. Well, that's
I mean, there's a maturity level.
I said a debater
issue,
in your third, and you're a debater in their third year. I actually don't buy so much into the. Yeah, I mean, on some level, yes, I think a sophomore novice has some maturity issues that make him or her probably stronger than some freshman novices. But I don't think that just because a kid's a junior, he should have to debate in varsity. I think that it's an issue of how many years and how many tournaments you have.
Right.
That's my opinion.
What's the harm of someone staying in JV longer? I don't understand.
Well, but then it becomes the issue that you were talking about, that if the idea is let's have JV be a division where people can feel good about themselves, I guess at a certain point if you have so many tournaments under your belt that it's unlikely that the majority of the pool, presuming that they don't have so many tournaments under their belt, will feel good about themselves, because those people will likely gobble up all the awards. I guess that's my.
Yeah, I mean, I'm putting people into that JV division. If I have JVers, and I usually do, I mean, it's their second year, and I want them to have a shot at doing well at those tournaments. And they're going to have that shot if it's a fairly even playing
field. I mean,
a
senior in JV is going to foul that up, I think. And it's happened. I've seen seniors in JV.
So would you recommend that tournaments would you recommend that tournaments have stricter guidelines as to what determines a junior varsity entry?
Well, here's what I think. I'm going to give a very waffling answer on this, but I do think this. I think that tournaments need to think about these issues, and I think tournaments reserve the right to be strict about it. I know that's not really a direct answer. If I were to have it, I wouldn't have a JV division at the tournaments I run, just because I think that these kinds of issues always arise and they become controversial. But if I did have a JV division, I'd probably have specific guidelines as to who is in JV.
Yeah, well, we have the Metro Hudson League, and we are going to next year issues very strict guidelines. It pretty much sound like the Minnesota thing. I might even just copy that and as the guidelines, because you know, we are trying to level the playing field. I do have a novice division of bump. I'm very specific in my definition of novice. It's your absolute first year of any kind of debate.
That's although in fairness to what Beat's saying, I just want to add one thing. I do think invitational tournaments are a bit of a different animal than what Menick and I run in the MHL, because the MHL is designed for specific kinds of people, whereas I think invitational tournaments have more autonomy in determining if, you know, both what a JV is and if they even want to define what a JV is, or if they want to leave it to coach's discretion.
At the same token, should the Glenbrooks, for example, say it must be a second-year debater? Because should someone in – if we're trying to give our kids a good experience, should there be novices in that division? Like first-time debaters in the JV division at the Glenbrooks?
Oh, so you're saying from the opposite perspective? Like,
yeah.
Is that watering it down? I guess – and again, this is sort of a cop-out answer. I'm not going to lie. It's kind of a cop-out. I have never – and this maybe this is just me. I don't know if this is true to other people. I've never had one of my debaters really have a negative experience at the JV Glenbrooks. Like I said, I think it's I think it's an incredibly fine tournament. I mean, you run the JV Glenbrooks.
Or any, yeah. Or I guess any JV division. Should there be a bottom, I guess, a floor as well as a ceiling? I mean, should the JV division be perfectly defined? If the novice division is perfectly defined,
No, I wouldn't think so. I mean, I would not want to define. I mean, the way even that Minnesota definition of a JV or the JV division included novices and JV. I mean, if somebody
you can
wants
always debate
to,
up.
Yeah, I mean, if somebody wants to spend the money to fly their kids somewhere, they ought to be able to do that if it's a novice, because you're not going to send your rank amateurs, and because yeah. it doesn't
maybe
make
you
sense.
Will. I mean,
okay. This is going to implicate Edina and Apple Valley back when I was coaching at Edina, where we had Jed Glickstein and John McNeil, who were second-year debaters. I think Jed, by the time the JV championships had rolled around, already had one bid to the TOC and was about to get his and would get his second one later, you know, in the following month. Is it wrong for him to? And then Apple Valley had Tim Hogan and Chris Bentley, both of whom I think probably achieved bids in their sophomore year. Yet they were all second-year debaters, and they all entered the JV division at the JV state championship.
That works for me. I mean, I would have no problem with that because that was created for the second-year debater. They happen to be the really, really good second-year debaters. They shouldn't be penalized for being good.
I don't have an issue with that because it's the state. I guess it's the state championship for that age level. I think it. I'm not going to lie. I would think it's a little lame-o if Jed Glickstein was debating JV all over the place, but I don't think he was, right? I mean, wasn't that pretty
no,
much
he,
where
I mean, he,
that was
not
it,
if he
right?
was getting TOC bids.
I think he was in the double locked as at Green Hill that same year.
Right. So, I mean, that was it, right? Wasn't that really the only JV tournament he went to? It's sort of like
yeah, it was.
I'm okay with that. That's, to me, the equivalent of Woodward, right? I mean, the Woodward National Championships, there are plenty of debaters who are in the second-year division. It is, in fact, not called JV there. It's called second-year debate, right?
Right.
And a lot of those debaters are varsity debaters. I mean, Matt Ross and Carolyn Clendenin from Bronx Science were there last year, and they didn't really – I don't think they actually ever competed. Maybe they went to one JV MHL. I think Matt Ross went to a JV MHL. But other than that, they debated in varsity, but that was a second-year division. So I'm okay with that at a championship kind of thing like that.
Yeah, and I think that's really going to be the only opportunity, when you think about it, for someone at that level to do that. So.
But is that fair? I mean, just looking back, if...
Yes, I think it's fair to be better than other people.
No,
it's not
fair
to be better
them,
than other people because you're more experienced.
Is it fair to take someone who, for the entire year, has been debating in another division and then drop them? I mean, there may have been other schools there where there was a kid from school X in Minnesota who for the entire year had been winning JV tournament. He loved being in JV. He goes to the JV championships, and guess what? Edina, Apple Valley, Hopkins are all going to send their best kids that are second year debaters in JV, even though those kids have gotten to go to Green Hill and the Glenn Brooks and the Blake tournament have had all this other experience, and now we're dropping these six or seven or eight, you know, debaters who have no business being in JV.
Well, yeah, but if you have a state organization and you're a member, an active member, an active participant in that, and that's the way that is set up. Would you put those people into varsity if you were so inclined? I mean, would that be a possibility?
Well, the JV state tournament's
like a
weird, different time.
Minnesota is like a weird, well, not weird, but it has a very restrictive system for qualifying to state.
Yeah,
right?
See, like if they were in New York and I had that situation, I don't think I could get the kid to debate in the JV division.
Right.
Right. Well, Minnesota, the JV championships, I think, are actually held in December. Right. And then the state tournament in Minnesota is actually run, well, very similar to the state tournament in California. It's like sports, where you have to get through your region first, and then you qualify to state.
I will give, I guess this is yet another cop-out answer, but I think it's just, the one thing I'll comment on this to answer Beats' question indirectly is that I think it's interesting that Woodward explicitly calls its division the second-year division, right? And I think that puts clear guidelines on it because a lot of those kids, I mean, every year at Woodward, there are kids in that division who have bids to the TOC, you know, who are going to be strong who go on. There have been multiple Woodward champs have gone on to win the TOC, not that year, but later on, right? And so it's interesting, I think, and probably purposeful that they at one point chose, okay, we're going to call this the second year.
I guess the reason why it might be a little bit different is because Woodward takes place in March, whereas the JV state championship in Minnesota is in December, right? And they don't start two-day tournaments in Minnesota until October. So basically, of October, November, December, and middle December, you're doing your championship tournament. Right.
Odd setup.
Minnesota.
Well, it used to be very common. Yeah, Minnesota's system, I think, used to be the norm, where it was like half the year was debate and half the year was speech.
Yes, right? That's exactly right. And so,
which I like. I like that idea.
So really, there's no chance. I guess what I'm saying is that there probably isn't much time for things to even out through in the course of a quote unquote full season, as opposed to Minnesota, where it's more like a half season or even just a couple months.
I'm trying to think if there's any bottom line to what we're saying. I mean, and it would seem to be that. I mean, one thing is that whatever the tournament is, whatever the venue is, they need to have very clear rules. I think this was a problem we have with the tournament, the league we're running. Our rules were a little loosey-goosey. We sort of changed them near the end for one reason or another.
Yeah, but you know what? Let's say one thing here. We did change the rules in the novice division, which we didn't really talk about. I don't think that we need to get into huge detail about that. But we have our first-time MHL traditionally is only for first-timers and novice. Now, we changed that in the belief that this would mean maybe a couple of schools that had like a scrimmage or two beforehand with another school would be able to compete. And we thought that was fair. But, you know, then it ends up that there were debaters who had actually debated many times before that already this year, but who were still first-year debaters coming in, right? Or last year, I think that was just ridiculous. In good faith, people came in who had debated several times this year already. Now, I think that Jim and I both acknowledged that was a mistake on our part in the end, although it was a well-meaning mistake. We realized in the end that that was a mistake because the vast majority of these debaters just clobbered the other kids who had just started debate. And I think that when you're at your first ever tournament, you know, you need a little leeway.
Yeah,
right?
So it's not about debating.
Right, and as one of my own debaters put it, he said, you know, it's not that any of these kids were necessarily much better. In fact, many of my own debaters felt like they understood debate more. It was just that these kids had an opportunity to get the butterflies out of their stomach.
Yeah, this is the first one. The first couple are about butterflies and adrenaline and
right.
all that sort of thing.
So I think the bottom line is one thing.
Definitions
is one thing. But the other thing I want to say, and, you know, this is not to – this is really not meant as a veiled thing about anyone or anything like that. But honestly, I think that when you're entering kids into JV, you need to ask yourself, why am I putting my kid in this division? Is it because my kid will benefit from it? Is it because we're going to win a lot of trophies as a team? If it's the latter, that's probably a lame reason to put somebody in JV. And again, for the sake of full disclosure, I love trophies, right?
Yeah, I'll face this issue myself this year if I, you know, when I send people to states, because I have a second-year debater, you know, who would much prefer, I'm sure, to go varsity than to go JV. And what do I do with her?
Well, keep in mind, the other story that, of course, we're not addressing here is that in many tournaments that have varsity and JV, varsity just gets what would be called the quote-unquote better judging, right? That's a fact at most tournaments. That's another issue we don't need to get into now, but that's something to be considered. That's, in fact, why so many kids want to go in varsity instead of JV.
Yeah, well, it's true in the R. Okay, that's very unclear discussion about every aspect of this, but it is an issue, and sure. It certainly comes up, and obviously different regions handle it differently. And as I said, one of the things we've had in the Northeast is a move away from the JV tournaments, JV divisions at invitational tournaments toward the novice divisions, which have filled up full. I mean, it has been in terms of just, the business of running that tournament's been very successful everywhere. So having the novice divisions has proven out. And like I said, I do it at Princeton, and we do it at Columbia, and they're filled divisions. No more space. Sure. Yes, we're getting those people in there. So
would Yale consider doing a novice division over a JV?
No, because it's too early in the year.
Yeah. I mean, certainly for the schools in the
area.
Oh,
I see what you're saying.
It's just way too early.
Yeah. I mean, mine is the first. I mean, Bump, which is the November, second weekend in November, is the first overnight tournament for novices. And that's about 2 months into their experience. And even there, they're still, as John will tell you, because he runs that division for me, they're still bumping into the walls.
Oh, sure. I mean, it's a whole different ball game. Once you're at an overnight tournament, then it feels completely different than a league tournament.
Yeah. So we've always had one. I took over the weekend that had been Newburgh had had that weekend in the past when they had a tournament, and that had always been the novice. So moving over there for a variety of reasons, taking on adding a novice division seemed like the thing to do. So we did. We did. And yeah, like I said, we've beaten that dead horse for a while. And so we will turn to our tech topic of the week. Oh, I love the fact that we have little departments. We have departments for this thing already. We're doing
you
it
need
four
to write
times.
Music for this. But okay, anyway.
Oh, we do need special music. I do, by the way, for going out, I've had people complain. People have complained that the podcast just ends. And so I have enlisted the assistance of the Hendrick Hudson Debate Marching Band, who will be providing us with outro music or whatever you want to call it.
All right, all right.
But we're going to need other music, so anybody who wants to volunteer some music, you want to get your debate team to record something for us, you know.
Okay, wait a moment. I'm interrupting here. Wait a moment.
What?
Confession time, Jim Menick. Who complained about it? That would be Katie Menick, the former debater, and your daughter.
And our only listener.
All right, well, hey, Katie. She represents 100% of the market.
And that's true. We should listen to her. We don't want to lose her.
That's right. We lose her, and we're done. And the only reason we got her was she'd forgotten to record Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Yeah, all right, so all right.
It's a tough life.
All right,
anyhow, imagine, if you will, music introducing our next segment, which is Tech Talk. Tech Talk. And this week's Tech Talk topic is Twitter.
Ooh, alliteration.
How do you like that? I mean, I could just ad-lib like crazy. I should have taken this up as a career. Anyhow, Twitter. We want to talk a little bit about Twitter because we've been using Twitter for a variety of debate things. I mean, I know that one of the things I started doing with it was based on what you guys were doing with it at VBI. So why don't you talk about that?
Well, it was sort of I guess a failed experiment because a lot of kids didn't. I mean, as an aside, I think that most studies are showing that, quote-unquote, tweens and people in their young teenage years just aren't using Twitter. They just don't. They don't use it as much as people in their 20s, 30s, and so on. It's become a much more popular thing amongst an older group.
I think that holds up, yeah.
Sure. So, anyway, what we were going to try to do is use Twitter to have kids to be able to have kids basically direct what the upcoming event is, where they need to go. I mean, VBI is so large, it's really hard to push even to lab leaders to
right.
push information to them in order to make sure that all the kids are in the right place and so on. So, I mean, this year we used a different technology, Google Voice, in order to do that to lab leaders. And we just made sure that we texted lab leaders often as to what they're supposed mm-hmm. to do, because getting people to sign up for Twitter and know how to use it, and then, you know, you also run into the problem of what if their parents would get mad at them because they're getting text messages and it costs them money, et cetera. So,
I took off on that. I mean, I just played off on the idea and used it for my team. So if I'm traveling with you and we're in, like, if we're all in the same building, it makes no sense. But if we went to, CFL, and we're in different places. And when we went to Yale, everybody's in a different place.
We use it at Harvard. Harvard is, I think, the best.
So here's the thing. I mean, I think maybe what makes it manageable is it's a smaller number of people. So I have a handful of people. I said, look, we're just going to set this up. We're not using it all the time, but it's just you send me a message like, or you know, you're back at the hotel, or I send you a message like, get on the bus, or whatever the case may be. It goes to those five people. It rings on their phone simultaneously, and they all just robot-like do what I want them to do, or I do what they want me to do, or whatever the case may be. And also, I've set it up and told parents about it, so parents can find out that, you know, we left now. So, you know, we're on the road and things like that. So with that small, manageable group, and I haven't done it all the time, but I've done it a few times, and I found it actually works pretty well for managing. See, I would have assumed it would have worked well with a big group, but I can see the problems as you state them.
One thing that I use it for, just to play off what Jim is saying, I mean, I use it on my at Brock Sands too. We have a very large team, and in certain terms, we bring massive numbers of people. So, like Harvard, we have an army at, and I found that using Twitter for, I'm going to be using Twitter for it this year at Harvard, and using it in situations like that has been really helpful. Another thing that I've used it for, I mean, we could have an entire podcast talking about how to work with debate alumni and whatnot and do fundraising and stuff like that. But Bronx Science has very strong connections to it, the alumni from the program. It's a very old program, very established program and whatnot. And when I came to Bronx Science, I really wanted to renew those ties, and I think I've been pretty successful in doing that. And one thing that one of our alumni, Adrienne Brevero, actually, she coaches policy in college, suggested, I thought was cool, but she said, why don't you set up a Twitter account for the alumni? And I said, oh, you got to be really nerdy if you want to tweet from the tournament about how we're doing, but okay.
This is the Bronx Science alumni, John.
Yes, okay. Exactly. And so needless to say, I set up the Twitter account. We had like over 100 subscribers in the first 10 minutes, and I'm being totally serious. And so what I've done is these alumni really appreciate it. I sent a little tweet out at the tournament. At the TOC, the alumni loved it, and the parents signed up for it too, because what we did was like a round-by-round tweet, like, Bronx Science MD is now debating so-and-so in LD. Bronx Science, at the time MB in policy debate, is now debating so-and-so. And people loved it. And I found that actually a couple of parents told me that they really loved it because, and you know, I don't do round-by-round tweets at all tournaments, but they said that they really loved it there because they knew their kids were never going to call them during the TOC. So they were able to feel somewhat like they were there because they were getting those little updates. And I think that's a lot of fun. And I think that actually it's a nice way of making people feel connected to it, even if they're not getting it live on their phone. Although I did think it was pretty cool that Richard Sadako was getting it live on his phone.
Well, I mean, I certainly did set up the other account for Debate Tab. Mm-hmm. And so I don't do that at a lot of tournaments, but certainly I did it at Yale because we would have things like schedule changes and stuff like that. And I had about 80 people following it. Presumably they were the people at the tournament because I told everybody to sign up for it. And about a week before the tournament, all of a sudden, all these people signed up for it. If you have people that are far flung at a tournament and I can send you a tweet and your phone's going to ring and it's, we're going to find you or we're going to tell you where to go or something like that, because then I think it's extremely valuable. Some people did not follow the tweets and didn't get some of the information, although there were other ways of getting the information. Of course, I had people who were following the tweets and didn't get the information that I just tweeted, but that's another thing altogether. But I find it very useful for that. I also want to point out that there's a new feature in Twitter that just started, which is lists. They finally have lists on the Twitter page. I mean, you might be able to do this with some of the special apps, but the Twitter itself, so I can make a list of debate accounts and tech accounts and so forth and so on. So when I'm actually looking at my computer and I want to follow Twitter, I don't have to follow 10,000 different people in that endless stream, but I can actually pick and choose who I want to follow. So Twitter's functionality is improving even at the level of the web page itself, which is a good thing.
How's it going to make money?
I don't have to worry about that. as long as they keep it free, it works for me. Essentially, they make money the way Facebook does at some point by having all this information on people. So,
yeah. You know. If you go to whendidyoujointwitter.com, you can see how long you've been on Twitter.
I was on Twitter for a long time before I figured out any reason why I was on Twitter. I was probably on for a year before I actually got into it because it was the stupidest looking thing ever. But once you finally have, because who wants to follow all these people you don't know? But once you have people that you do know and you're broadcast, it's just a glorified instant messaging system is how I'm using it.
Sure.
But I get instant messages to 100 people at the same time on their telephones, and this is set up to do that. Well, that's not a bad thing. I don't have to do anything except have them learn how to do Twitter. And it's not hard. Yeah.
I've been on it since December of 2006. And I only recently started using it as I use it mostly as a news feed. Like it's almost like my RSS reader. Mm-hmm. I use Tweety and TweetDeck. TweetDeck, you can just create an entire group of just news. And so you just can watch the news coming in. It's like having a ticker. From the New York Times.
Whenever some
Nation
actor
magazine
dies, I'm the first to know it.
Yeah.
That's not funny.
It was true. I mean, that's what Twitter's all about. Anyhow, I do recommend that people take a look at it for team herding, which is what I use it for. And I do ask if you're coming to a tournament and I'm going to be tabbing it that you follow the tweets there because you might miss something good. And also we can get you when we need your ballot. There have been people who have wandered off with their ballots and we don't know how to reach them. And if they were following us, I could say, you get back here. They wouldn't.
Yeah.
They'd ignore it, but at least we'd feel better than having yelled at them.
Although,
I would recommend that if you're just starting out on Twitter and you subscribe to a lot of people, to turn off phone notifications.
Oh, yeah.
And just read it.
Yes,
like a...
I've been getting LeVar Burton's phone notifications every 5 minutes. Now, Beats's and Menix I enjoy, but hearing about LeVar Burton's meal...
Yeah, LeVar, I stopped following LeVar. I mean, it was nice while it lasted, but...
For the nerds out there, I will say that the best person to follow, though I wouldn't follow him by phone because he constantly tweets, is Will Wheaton, who you might know better as Wesley Crusher from Star Trek The Next Generation.
I stopped following him before I started.
Best.
Oh, he's
the
worst.
Not? Oh. I'm shocked, Jimenic.
I'm not a Will Wheaton fan. I'm sorry. He's the world's worst actor, and I don't get
but
all
he's
this
not,
other
but
stuff.
But that's not what the... That's not what his, I mean, he definitely acknowledges that. Okay, anyway, that's a debate for another day.
How good is Will Wheaton? Stay tuned.
How good is Will Wheaton at being bad is really what the debate is. He's the best.
All right, anybody have any predictions for the upcoming weekend?
I predict that the Meadows tournament will have the best hospitality of any tournament. They take you to a casino to eat dinner.
That's pretty amazing.
They pay for it. And then there is food throughout the tournament that's just there and free, and it's good food too. And the tournament doesn't start until 10 a.m. on either Friday or Saturday. So Whoa. No early morning, no and Sunday doesn't start until 10 a.m. either. So no early morning.
Well, 3-day tournament, you can do stuff in 3-day tournament. How many award ceremonies do they have in their 3-day tournament?
Well,
just out of curiosity.
They
have a belt,
do,
right?
They
don't only have one award.
They have one award. All they give is the winner gets an award. Every other place gets some trinket, but the money in lieu of an award goes to a charity of the choosing of the debate team, and the proceeds all go to that in the name of the person that would have gotten that award.
Well, that's good. I like that.
Also, can I make another plea? If you have swine flu or swine flu-like symptoms, do not go to debate tournaments because you're going to get the rest of us sick. You're not being tougher by going, so just stay home and get better and don't infect the rest of us.
I strongly agree with that.
John, your tournament was like plague heaven. I mean, somebody had swine flu and then everybody had swine flu
no,
that was there.
No comment.
I think
all
we're
I can
call
tell
them.
You is that I was homesick this past weekend right after the I started getting sick at the very end of the MHL, and was off from work on Monday, and that was unfortunate.
Unfortunate. Okay. Well, on that note, don't go to any debate tournaments because they're just hotbeds of viruses and plague and black vomit and all that kind of stuff. And, well, we were talking about the new topic last night at our meeting. Black vomit did come up. Ebola virus.
Ebola.
I love Ebola. My favorite.
You heard it here first. Case disclosure. HenHud will be running.
We'll be running Ebola
black
virus.
Black vomit.
Black vomit on the airplane. Okay.
There is an Ebola vaccine.
There is? Okay.
There is?
There you go.
I think in Germany earlier this year, a doctor pricked herself with Ebola and... And was able to, I guess, fend it off. And I think I believe that there is a Ebola vaccine. So get your evidence ready on that one.
Okay, and on that note, we will draw to a close. I do ask people. Nobody's done it yet. I can't even get my daughter to do it. Our 100% of our audience has not gone on to our blog, theviewfromtab.blogspot.com. Feel free to comment or offer suggestions or argue or... whatever. And of course you can follow us on iTunes. I hope somebody is. Somebody actually is. I know people are listening because we've gotten responses from people other than blood relatives. So we're doing pretty well. So on that note, I want to thank everybody for listening, and guys, we'll see you all next week.
Goodbye. Cue the music.
Cue the music. Bye-bye. The Hen Hud debate marching
led by Zach Struver, the people's champion.
There we go. Boom.